This is Ian Stahl from Ian Stahl Music, and you're listening to Valley Free Radio 103.3 FM WXOJLP at Northampton.
Hi, I'm Steve Chelmsford. I'd like to invite all of you to check out my show, The Mop Tops and the King, featuring music of the Beatles and Elvis, and many artists in between, every Saturday night at 7 p.m. right here on Valley Free Radio, WXOJLP.
For the best in electro, new wave, funk, and dance, tune into Subculture Friday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Listen from your computer, iPad, or phone by tuning into valleyfreeradio.org. Subculture, Friday nights, here on WXOJ.
Who are my neighbors? Tune in to Out There to meet some of them. Out There airs every Wednesday from 4 to 5 in the afternoon with me, Ruthie Woodring. Come with me and my recorder to meet people and plants and think about ways we can share the world. That's Out There every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. here on Valley Free Radio, WXOJLP, 103.3 FM, Northampton. Archived editions of Out There are online at weatherbeard.com/RUTHY. Get out if you can. But if you can't get out, tune in. And that's right now. Welcome to Out There. Dwayne Rainey's in the studio here with me today. Thanks, Dwayne, for coming in.
Looks like you're doing a little smoother today than you did last week.
Well, last week was very rough. Today's show is a mix of a lot of little things. One thing I have is an interview with my friend Emily Wergeen about her reaction to the legalization of gay marriage in all 50 states a few weeks ago by the Supreme Court. And then I have some on the street questions, interviews, not really interviews. It popped into my head to ask people on the street a question. If the world were a little more just, how might your life be different? So I have a chunk of those responses. I have a little bit about Pulaski Park and random this and that.
This and that.
So we'll start with this. Emily. What?
We're starting with this.
You. Yeah, well, we'll start with Emily. I just happened to be going by her house on Sunday, and it occurred to me that there was an interview subject. So this is Emily Wergeen.
She had no place to go.
When I was a teenager and I was living in central Wisconsin, and the only gay people I knew of, like, there weren't very many of them, and they weren't very open. Like, I had a teacher who was a lesbian, and she had a partner, and it was like this thing that some people knew, but not many people knew. They definitely didn't talk about it publicly. Wait, how old are you? 34. So this is like mid-90s. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, at that point in my life, I never would have imagined that gay marriage would ever even be a thing. And I wasn't even really out even to myself. I was just like super awkward. Anyway, so I wasn't like shocked like the other day when it happened. Like it was cool, but by that point, so much had changed that it wasn't so surprising. Mm-hmm. I mean, just a little bit, but yeah, my younger self was very surprised.
Mm-hmm. So tell me what you were saying about the HRC. And
so a number of years ago, I had joined the HRC for a year.
What's HRC?
Human Rights Coalition. They do a lot of advocacy for LGBT people. And it was the year that President Bush had given this like $300 refund on everyone's taxes as like a thing to jumpstart the economy. Uh-huh. And I was really frustrated because I thought it was like the idea was everyone was going to go out and buy stuff. Uh-huh. And I thought this was a dumb idea. Yes, it's nice to get $300 in the mail, but like, what a weird way to jumpstart the economy. There were so many things they could be investing in that were so much more valuable. And I was idealistic. You know, I was working my first job and had enough money that $300 wasn't something I needed. Mm-hmm. Like, it was nice, but I had the benefit of being able to choose whether I wanted to use it the way they were telling me to or to do mm-hmm. something else. And so I took my $300 and I donated it to a bunch of nonprofits. Mm-hmm. And so I gave some to the Minneapolis Public Libraries and some to like a bike organization in the Twin Cities and a couple other things. I don't remember all of them, but one of them is I joined the HRC. Mm-hmm. And it was like probably like $25 or something that I gave them. But anyway, then a year later I got my renewal form. And at the time, like, I'd been single most of the time. I wasn't at all thinking about whether I wanted to get married ever. I'd gotten kind of irritated that the only thing that HRC seemed to be focusing on was marriage. And I'm like, this is something that only benefits some gay people. Yeah. And they weren't focusing on things like homeless youth and, like, employment discrimination. Or I mean, I don't know. Maybe they were focusing on these a little, but definitely marriage was their big thing. And so when I got my renewal form, I sent back, like, a little letter saying, I wish they focused on other things. I'm not donating if they're not. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I heard no response. I'm sure some intern, like, opened that and threw it away. Anyway, time passed. I got older. I moved to Massachusetts. I met Kat, who's now my wife. And, of course, we ended up getting married here in Massachusetts, where it had been legal for almost 10 years. Yeah, it's funny because I never, as a kid, mm-hmm. I was never one of those girls that was, like, thinking about my wedding day and mm-hmm. what marriage would be like. It wasn't, like, at all in my, like, dreams and aspirations and imagination. So it's really funny to get to a point in life where suddenly I'm with someone who I want to spend time with and be connected to and, like, have the benefits that you get with marriage and the commitment. So it was funny to find myself in a place where I was making that decision that I didn't expect to make. And it's really amazing that it happened at a time when, like, I actually could get married. Mm-hmm. In the state, in both the state I had been living in, Massachusetts, and then in the state that we had just moved to when we decided, Vermont. And then within, like, almost exactly a year of getting married, suddenly it's legal everywhere.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about...
At least in the U.S.
What do you think about... So there's an article in the Gazette about how in some places, some places in Kentucky where court clerks were refusing to issue marriage licenses to gay and lesbian couples. What do you think about people's religious beliefs and how that... It's so deeply seated, the religious opposition to gay marriage in some religious communities. What do you think about that?
Yeah.
And I should just say that, like, I grew up in the Bible Belt completely convinced that marriage was only something that could be between a man and a woman who could procreate, and that was just how God made us. And I was like 19, or no, like 17, or maybe 18. I was about 18 before I was exposed to information and people that made me think there could be another way or other ways.
Yeah. It's interesting. I've lived mostly, aside from where I grew up, which was kind of moderate, but most of the places I've lived are pretty liberal places. Mm-hmm. And I haven't been surrounded by lots and lots of people that are really religious. And when I have been, it's mostly like Lutherans, which are pretty non-judgmental and chill about their religion. So I haven't personally had to deal with that issue specifically. But I guess the whole argument that you can use your religious beliefs to deny someone a service that is like kind of like a public service, mm-hmm. I find frustrating and kind of troubling. I have encountered that issue more on the like medical side. When I moved up to Brattleboro with Kat, when we were trying to get a primary care physician, there's like a real shortage in Vermont of primary care physicians. And so we're calling around trying to find anyone who was accepting new patients, and no one was accepting new patients. Until I found this couple that had just moved to town. They were two doctors, mm-hmm. and they were accepting new patients. Mm-hmm. But when I was on the phone with the secretary trying to sign up, she said, now, you should know that they don't prescribe birth control, and they don't prescribe, I think, like, antidepressants or something. I can't remember. And it was funny, because I'm not on birth control. I don't really need birth control. but the second I heard that, I was like, whoa, these are not doctors I want to have. Because clearly, if they're making that decision, which I assumed was a religiously motivated decision, then I am afraid that they're not going to be a good doctor for me as, like, a queer woman. Like, mm-hmm. like they might, who knows, maybe they'll be nice to me, maybe they won't, like, outwardly be judging me, but probably they have some beliefs that are really mm-hmm. not going to sit well with me and not make me comfortable as a patient mm-hmm. being with them. And so I, like, you know, kept calling around and eventually found someone else. Mm-hmm. But it was really frustrating being in this small town where there weren't a lot of doctors, that the only two doctors that I could find easily that were accepting new patients seemed like they probably weren't going to be good doctors for me to go to.
I was listening to something on the radio this morning, some news program, that made me think about this again. And it was like a news program where they're talking to religious leaders about the whole Supreme Court decision.
Uh-huh.
And a couple of the religious leaders, they're just talking about like kind of like culture war or the culture maybe moving in this direction, but it's kind of like, yeah, well, the culture is moving in the direction of materialism and consumerism. That's never going to be right. And I think that was kind of what those religious leaders were kind of saying. Well, yeah, we're going to fight it. We just believe it's not right, and we always will, because that's just the fundamental belief or something. So it's like hard to know what to do with that, how to agree to disagree.
Yeah.
When, like,
yeah. If I were part of a religion that was really against gay marriage, or like, especially if they were just against the homosexuality in general,
yeah,
I would have a really hard time with it, and I probably would leave that religion if that were the case. But if there is a religion that chooses not to like perform marriage ceremonies for same-sex couples, I recognize that that's their right to do that as like their religion and like in their church.
Yeah.
But it's when someone that's part of one of those organizations, when they're in a job where they're like a civil servant and they decide not to obey a law, essentially, it's like, okay, like, yeah, the state says that gay people can get married now, and if your job is to issue marriage licenses, like... But then again, like, in other situations, I'm all for civil disobedience, so
yeah.
This is just clearly an issue, I just disagree.
Yeah.
But maybe you shouldn't be performing that form of civil disobedience if that's your job. I don't know.
So do you think that a religious organization can be opposed to same-sex marriage? Can they maintain that marriage is a commitment between a man and a woman for like procreation kinds of reasons? And can they support civil unions between same-sex couples? And can you feel totally respected and accepted if that were the case? Is that possible?
No, I don't think totally accepted and respected, no. But, like, I could feel like, okay, I disagree. I think you're... I don't know. I'm not a religious person. I was raised in a Methodist church.
Mm-hmm.
I went to church regularly as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
As an adult, found that, like, the actual, like, religious doctrine, I don't really completely buy it. But the part of being a Methodist and a Christian that resonated with me as a kid was the, like... love your neighbor as thyself, doing good deeds and being nice to people and caring for people and watching out for people that don't have as much as you do. And I just feel like the whole rhetoric and the really strong feelings that some religious people have against people who are expressing love in a way that they don't themselves agree with, I don't get it. I mean, most religions have that core that I agree with, of, like, being nice to people as part of their religion, and to, like, focus so strongly on this thing that's all about excluding and not loving people.
Yeah.
To me, it's a contradiction.
Yeah. What do you think's the role of patriarchy in all this?
I mean, definitely... gay marriage reinforces this idea we have of a culture where, you know, people pair up and have these nuclear families. But it also completely messes with the idea that these are a gendered thing where there is a man head of household and a woman, and, you know. So I don't know. I wonder how much people's fear of that setup getting eroded is motivating.
That was Emily Wergeen, a friend and neighbor from Florence. The next clip I have is also of Emily, but she's talking about the bicycle procession that she and her wife, Kat, had at their wedding.
Like I said, I never dreamed about getting married when I was a kid. I don't remember ever thinking about it. But at some point when I was in my 20s, and I was living in Minneapolis, I went on this group bike ride. It was like maybe an hour bike ride outside the Twin Cities. Yeah, a lot of people went there by bike, like, in a big group. And it was, like, the coolest thing ever, because it's all these, like, interesting people riding their bikes, like, with their stuff to sleep overnight, like, and it was so fun. And I'm like, man, I had also just been to a wedding of a friend where we had gone on a walking procession from where the ceremony was to where the reception was, and that was really cool. And I'm like, if I ever get married, I want there to be a bicycle procession, and I want to bike from one place to another, and that'd be awesome. it was very exciting when we got married here, but we were able, with your help, to make that happen, because you pulled us in the bike, the pedicab.
Can I tell the listeners a little bit more about the bike procession?
Yeah, I think we had about half of the people in the wedding go. It was like over 100 people at the wedding. I think there was around 50 of them on bicycles. You know, some people were from in town, so they were on their own bikes. And then some of the guests figured out how to rent bikes and got their own bikes. And then with your help, Ruthie, and with some other people.
James Lowenthal's help.
Yeah, yes, James. Mm-hmm. You rounded up a bunch of other bikes. Oh, and with Craig Della Penna,
right.
I was staying at his bed and breakfast. We rounded up all the bikes they've got there because he's got this trailside bed and breakfast with all these bikes. So there was just tons of bikes.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone who wanted a bike ended up getting a bike. Yeah, so we biked from Look Park, mostly on the bike path, all the way to Smith College. It was really fun. It was especially fun going through town. Like, we went by that bar right on the bike path,
oh,
and
yeah,
there's all these people that were, like, cheering us on.
Yeah, I remember going down the path, and, you know, there was such a huge crowd of us. We were kind of taking over the path.
Oh, we totally
and,
took over the path.
And you two were in the front in the gown and suit.
Yeah.
And it was interesting how people just saw one look at you two in the pedicab, and they were like, happy. What did they say, happy? What do you say? We're still married. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
But I remember this one guy that just like pulled off the path and was just like with a big smile on his face and he just like totally stopped for the procession. Was like, congratulations.
Yeah, I think we were definitely interrupting a lot of people's bike rides. But...
That's been an interview with Emily Wergeen.
And Nutmeg.
And Nutmeg the dog. Stanley the dog is also there. So the next... All right, this is Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. And Dwayne Rainey's in the studio. Next, I have a little bit of music. The first little, you know, half a minute is some African drumming, some live African drumming that I came across in my travels outside at an African dance center, dance and drumming center in Washington, D.C. And then there's a waltz, which is kind of like wedding music.
Thank you.
That's Molly and Annie and their other friend. And Molly and Annie's Brooklyn apartment, practicing for a wedding.
Dwayne, can you tell us about the oil train? Or so, did you have another comment?
Yeah, I like the squeaky rocker in it.
I think that was actually the bathroom door. I was like...
Hiding?
No, I was in the bathroom when they started practicing, and I thought, oh, this sounds interesting.
Yeah, new way and for bathroom music.
I sneaked my recorder out the bathroom door.
The things you do for an interview. Yeah, let's see, around town, let's see, this is going to be Sunday, July 12th at 11:30, I guess it's in the morning, Stop the Oil Trains and Mourn the Victims. As part of a national week of action, Climate Action Now and the Unitarian Society of Northampton's Climate Action Group are jointly sponsoring a protest vigil to commemorate the second anniversary of the explosion of tar sands carrying oil train of a tar sands oil carrying train in Magnetic, Quebec, that killed 47 people and destroyed much of the town. All are invited to the steps of Memorial Hall at 240 Main Street in Northampton, and that's on Sunday, July 12th at 11:30, to demand the end of bomb trains. So you can get a hold of, Daniel Ritchie at 8238, or zz8daniel@yahoo.com. So that's, I guess, this Sunday.
Sunday, all right.
Be there.
Thanks, Dwayne.
Yeah.
This is Ruthie from Pedal People with a public service announcement. If you frequent downtown Northampton or Florence and you pass by the recycling and trash bins on the street, the public ones, I'm here to let you know that cups are not recyclable. No plastic cups, no paper cups, no styrofoam cups, no clear cups, red cups, blue cups, yellow cups, no insulated cups. Because if you put cups in the recycling bin, it means either I pick them out or someone at the sorting facility picks them out in Springfield, or it contaminates the whole load too much that the whole load is considered trash. Or if you can just bring your own cup altogether and not have disposable cups, that'd be even better. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your cooperation.
Anything to add to that, Dwayne?
Yeah, there's a lot of cups. People think they're doing the right thing, but, I mean, oh, I'm recycling, and they throw them all in the recycling container, but they're not recyclable.
Yeah, another thing I'd like to add is that if you do have cups or bottles with liquids in it, if you could pour out the liquids,
pour them out.
That'd be great too, because so much weight of the trash that we haul is just liquids, whether it's rain from after a rainy day or stuff in bottles. And
it gets really sloppy.
Yeah, sometimes it's liquid. Sometimes it's bottles of piss from people's car.
Oh, well. TMI. Too much of a reason.
But mostly, I'm just asking for people to pour out the water out of water bottles. At least
yes,
pour the water
the coffee
out.
Or...
let's see. Oh, here. I have some self-reflection while doing downtown trash this morning.
I'm emptying downtown trash barrels this morning, and as I'm walking towards some of the barrels from my bike and trailer, I can see my reflection in many of the storefront windows. And when I first noticed my reflection, I thought, oh, that's nice. And then I thought, part of the reason I don't wear makeup or worry about shaving or my hair or stuff like that is because, for me, one question is, how much energy do I spend thinking about myself and how much energy do I spend thinking about others? So then I was trying to spend more energy thinking about others. And I was stopped at the stoplight in this guy pulled up next to me in a truck with a petroleum products services sign on the truck, and he was a rather large man, and then I found myself thinking about him in kind of a negative way. So then I thought, oh, maybe I shouldn't spend so much time thinking about other people, and I should think about myself and improving myself inside.
Dwayne, anything to add to that?
No comment.
Okay, so the next series of clips I have, so it popped into my head to ask to do a random person on the street kind of questioning. And
how many people did you ask?
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. I probably asked about 20 people, and maybe 8 or 10 agreed to say something.
The other people thought you were trying to sell them something?
No, they were just feeling shy. And you know what I noticed about the people that I asked is I found that white men were more likely to be willing to speak and to be recorded. And so then I noticed amongst myself, even though I was trying to get a broader cross-section of people in Northampton, I noticed among myself that when I was getting more like positive responses from white men, then it made me tend to target them more because I don't really like the rejection. So this is so the question was, if this world were a little more just, how might your life be different? And I was hoping to get more like specific kind of things, like how might your life be different? But people came up with all different kinds of answers. And these are all from Northampton and Florence.
I feel like in my life I've gotten a pretty fair break on things. And so I don't know how different it would be. But I do know when I think about justice and fairness in anything that arises, any one thing, like getting ripped off by a cab driver or something where in the moment it's not being fair, I get quite angry and it's a cause for great suffering. But when I think in a more broad sense and I think about life differently, about what I have and what I'm grateful for, compared to, say, the average person on the planet, I'm really quite happy and content and grateful and fortunate. When I think about things as being, that's fair, that's not fair, justice is not being served, this person deserves punishment and doesn't, and that person deserves something good because something bad's happened to them, that's just a cause for unhappiness. It's kind of a resistance to what's happening here and now. And so getting too caught up in justice and fairness can really end up making one unhappy.
The world being just for myself is just being myself and making the best of my life, doing what I want to do within the rules, and trying to make my life happy and not worry about anybody else, because you can only control what you do, not anybody else's life. So, and I have a faith and I believe in Jesus Christ, and that helps. Mm-hmm. And that's where I get my freedom from, you know. And that's it.
I think the world going to be more education, because I think the justice in education. Uh-huh. This is why the world is like this. We need more education. Uh-huh. And I believe then it was just the world. All the country going to be better, all the community, all the people, all the school, all the work, all the dream. Uh-huh. It's going to be a balanced dream, uh-huh, a successful dream. It's not like we think just in ourselves, uh-huh, and do whatever you want, uh-huh, but to do what is better to the world.
Uh-huh. Is there anything specific about like you and your life or your dreams or your education?
Yeah, I'm thinking that in environmental education.
The what?
Environmental education.
That's
what you're asking? Like it's in, I'm thinking about, we don't see just in a human being, but we see in environmental. Mm-hmm. How we treat the garbage, how we treat the people, how we treat the poor people, how we treat the people that live on the street, how we treat the people that have family problems. This is justice. The justice not to go to the court and things. The justice for everywhere.
I'd probably still be in jail.
Why would that be more just?
For the rest of the world.
I think that the world gonna be more education, because I think the justice in education. Uh-huh. This is why that the world is.
Dreams, your education.
The people that have family problems.
Yes, hello. This is Eric, speaking for Valley Free Radio. I just wanted to say something on homelessness. I believe in this country concerning the issue of homelessness, though we're wrapped up in issues in the Middle East. If you really want a choice, you should be able to have the choice between living in a tent or a hallway and having a home. if you want to give up the tent for an apartment, I think you should have a choice in this country. We have enough money to provide for homelessness and to help the homeless. There are programs, Section 8s in place, but some people are living in tents. I think more can be done with this issue. And that's it for now. Thank you.
So I was evicted for that. I ended up in a tent on Conn Street and then under the bridge with him briefly after Florence. So, yeah, I just think, you know, we're all wrapped up in the Middle East right now and funding predator drones and everything. And so homelessness isn't really spoken. Obama's not saying anything about it. You know, I mean, I mentioned to a buddy, John, you know, if you really want to be, you know, cliche, I mean, just get on the White House website, www.whitehouse.org, and send a note. You know, I'm homeless. Do you care? That's what he said, you know? So maybe on the thousands of emails, you know, somebody might get that one of these days, you know, an intern on a rainy, cloudy day, for all we know.
My first impulse is to think of a just world giving me personal justice and how I could be have more opportunities than I thought I had. But then I realized the more powerful benefit for me and the more ethically sure. See, I'm not ethically sure how much I should have of the Earth's abundance.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that I've got more than most people and in the world. And if a lot of the people that have less than me in the world, if they had more and I had less, in a way, you know, as far as like do away with cars maybe, then I would benefit from feeling that I'm okay in relation to all the rest of the world, that we're all in it together.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be a good feeling, a feeling of belonging, not struggling against those who have or struggling. The struggle would be a struggle to care for others and have others care for me. I don't know how much a call for a just world would include my ideal, which is that people's interpersonal difficulties would be facilitated by the larger group. There would be a lot more counseling, a lot more community resources for how are you doing today?
Uh-huh.
What's going on with you today? Well, I was born and I had a supportive family and decent economic relations, but my ideal would be that sort of everybody has the same starting ground, or at least if they're born into a family that's got big problems, that the society kind of helps them up so that they're almost at the level of very wealthy people's birthright.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's hard for me to decipher exactly, but when I hear about Bill Gates, they're giving away their wealth. They say, my kids, I'm going to give them a little something, but my billions of dollars are not going to go to my kids.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give it away to the world. That's some kind of balancing out.
Yeah.
But I'd ideally like that balance to be in effect right for everyone at birth.
Yeah. Maybe one step to take would be doing away with inheritances.
Yeah, it seems okay with me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's someone who says they'd like to own their own house or in the land that they garden on, and that everyone should be able to own their own home and do away with the landlord profiting business. Is that fair enough?
If it was more just ours, I would have been taking a carpentry class in my school instead of a sewing class. We are female were forced to take sewing and cooking class when I was young.
Well, I'm a white guy, and I think the world would be a lot harder if it were more just. I would definitely have a lot fewer doors open to me in the way that they are now. And I'd have a lot more pressure to figure out what I want to do and do it. You know, I'm in my 20s and I'm experimenting with, you know, different career paths, and if the world were more just, I would have to have a stronger plan and I wouldn't have the expectation that it would all work out.
For me, it would be mostly seeing that
people felt safe in their lives in our culture, and that they felt a sense of belonging that also came from this genuine safety in their material existence and their physical existence and their relationships. And I would get to feel their sense of happiness and get to share in that, their sense of being welcome in the world and with other humans.
It would be easier to share, and other people would share more. And the first thing that came to mind was transit and transportation and giving rides to people and getting rides and stuff like that.
I wouldn't have as much pressure on me to make money in order to get by. I could maybe do a little bit more of what I wanted, and other people wouldn't be so stressed out and so preoccupied with means to an end.
Yeah, it's true, because the price of yachts would be way lower.
I don't think that's true. I think it might be. Well, I don't know.
College education and the stock market have tracked is similarly over the last 30 years, whereas inflation has not risen nearly as fast. So, in other words, if your wealth is in the stock market, college costs the same as it did 30 or 40 years ago. And if your wealth is from earned wages, then everything is a lot more expensive. I think healthcare, college, housing, those are the main things that like have real value, so they tend to track with the people who have loads of moolah.
So those are some friends and neighbors' thoughts on justice, whatever that word means. Dwayne, you look like you got something over there you want to share.
It's like I'm doing the evening news here. This is another kind of the Northampton Committee to Stop War 2015 Summer Film Series, July 13th. Let's see, so that's what, Saturday?
The 13th, July 13th is a Monday.
Oh, okay, yeah.
On this calendar.
Right. The film chronicles the agricultural crisis affecting farmers in Punjab, India.
Sorry, I don't need
backup music. Thank you. Which is causing them to commit suicide. The suicide is a result from an indebtedness spurred by the demands of globalization. The victims' families, burdened with mounting debt, are left without any means of support. This 5-year-old film relates to current events from Monsanto, the Fast Track, TPP, etc. Mr. Rasil Basu, I hope that's his name, embarked on this film after leaving a 40-year career at the UN as a human rights lawyer. When her husband of 50 years died, she wanted to reach out to the widows of the Punjab farmers. She's 90 years old. The 90-year-old filmmaker of the 60 Minutes, she will introduce and talk about her film. So that's Monday, July 13th, from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at Forbes Library, West Street, Northampton.
Thanks, Dwayne. The next thing I have is actually just taken from the internet. It's from the funeral of Robert Kennedy, the eulogy that his brother Edward Kennedy gave.
He died.
Some men see things as they are and say why. I dream things that never were and say why not.
What is segregation?
I don't know what segregation is.
What is bigotry?
I don't know what bigotry is.
What does hatred mean?
I don't know what it is.
What is prejudice?
I think it's when somebody's sick.
So that video is actually a Tom Clay video called What the World Needs Now is Love, also Abraham, Martin, and John. And wait, I gotta stop the computer. Okay. And that reminds me of just how awesome I think it is that Bree Newsom climbed the flagpole in South Carolina a couple of weeks ago at the state capitol and took down the Confederate flag. I'm really inspired by that and think everyone should know if you don't already know. So, Dwayne?
So, I'm listening.
Okay, so the next comments I have. Okay, so if you haven't been downtown in the last week or so, well, if you have been downtown, you've probably noticed how the trees are being cut in Pulaski Park. When I say the trees, I mean
right by the bench.
Oh. Yeah, you've sat under the shade of that tree for many years, right?
Many years.
Yeah.
20, maybe 30.
The tree, I tried to count the rings, so it was like 35 or 40.
Maybe not the same bench, but
years old, it seemed like the same. Yeah, the tree has outlasted the bench, huh?
Bench, yeah. No, I think something like that.
But like the main evergreen tree in the center of the park.
No more Christmas.
and what, one of the honey locusts, all four of the Coosa dogwoods, which I used to eat the food from. So the Pulaski Park is under redesign, and it's something that's been in the works for, I think, since 2007, maybe, since Claire Higgins was mayor. So I've seen some of the designs in past years and known that this plan was kind of coming. I think just in, was it this spring, I think, there were three separate forums for feedback that took place, and there's a design firm out of Cambridge, Lauren Stimson Designs, an architecture firm that's been doing the design.
Yeah, it was kind of a bummer. One day you're sitting there in the shade, and the next day you've got SPF 80 on.
Yeah, it's a
same bench.
It's a 1.1 acre park, and the renovations are going to cost up to $2.4 million. Some of that's coming from CPA grant money. Some of it is from state grant money. And I just know that I'm not really into appearances a whole lot. And I love trees, and so to see those trees cut down was hard for me to stomach. So I went into the mayor's office today to see what the plans were. If you go onto the second floor of City Hall, there's pictures of the design for the renovations. And so I was looking for someone to maybe talk about the designs for the show. And David Narkowitz came out, so I asked him about it. I kind of started recording partway into his talking about the park. Oh, wait, one more thing I should say is you can go online on the DPW website, I think, and see these designs. Here we go.
Think about the park redesign.
Yes, what we think about
wait a minute. Nope. Actually,
That's not the mayor.
First, we have some comments from the public about the park redesign. Here we go.
You guys, what you think about the park redesign?
Listen, you know what we think about this park? I'm gonna tell you what me and him think about this park. There's many people homeless, without nothing, in the streets. Most of them are in jail.
Uh-huh.
Most of them are in jail because they're on drugs and that. So, you know, that money could be used for the homeless.
Instead of using it
for the park. That tree has been there for I don't know how long. Yeah. Look what they did to it. They cut it down.
There was four of them right there.
Christmas tree.
You know what I'm saying? It's been there since I've been here, since I've been a kid.
That's an ancient tree. That was historical. Uh-huh. I like the idea that this is all frozen up in the wintertime, and neither the town or the BVTA want to clean that up so people don't slip and fall and hurt themselves.
I mean, for crying out loud, look at that dip right there. If an old person was to walk through there, trip over that. Look at how it's sinking.
So you say like some parts of the redesign,
The park has always been fine. Everybody comes and enjoys themselves.
Take care of the necessities, not cut down beautiful trees.
Yeah, don't cut down beautiful living trees. Luckily that this guy survived. Look at the other guy over there. Those trees are older than us.
I got that picture in the fall. That's a nice tree fall.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful. The whole ground was covered with nice yellow leaves.
Yeah, man. Those trees have been here since I was a kid. My kids grew up around those trees.
I was going to print it in the Gazette.
That's what I think about.
And the playground, what you said about
so the playground? They've created a nature play area that's going to be that's going to be built with sort of natural materials, mm-hmm. And have like a platform and tree stumps and a bunch of other cool elements to replace the one that was over there. And then this whole area over here is going to be like a woodland garden over on the side next to Memorial Hall, mm-hmm. that will have a lot more. So at the end of the day, and then there's going to be new trees planted that'll be more appropriate for that area for the plaza. So at the end of the day, there's going to be sort of no net loss of trees, and it's actually going to be more green space, mm-hmm. and less concrete. Yeah. Right now it's sort of a big concrete, mess there. Yeah. And then this is a stage area, but it's not raised in any way. It's just, right. They call it a stage, but it's just an area that's demarcated so that you can have performances. You can have, the Pulaski Day celebration that happens every fall. It just kind of creates a way. And then you've got this great lawn, which is mm-hmm. kind of pitched slightly down from the academy. That'll be sort of perfect just for people to gather and sit and even watch music or watch performances or whatever.
Sort of drain into the rain garden area.
Exactly, yeah, and that's the whole idea, is that we're trying to model sort of natural stormwater retention systems. So this is going to be a swale that'll be planted, and it'll be the way that we collect rainwater. And take it away. And then the best part, I mean, this is the part two, but this is the overlook, uh-huh. Which is going to be a new way to get down to the parking lot. So instead of dropping off a cliff, and it's going to be a gradual embankment that'll have this little switchback feature so that people who wanted, wheelchairs or strollers or whatever can get up easier. There's still going to be this sort of direct promenade, and then a really wide staircase, okay. that'll have the ability to do, you can get onto the switchback anywhere. There's going to be seating areas. This is going to have a one of those bike rails.
Bike rail?
Yeah, so that if somebody wants to just walk their bike up or down the stairs using the rail, they can do that as well. And then, there's going to be lots of bike racks, tons of bike racks. The bus stop will be reconfigured slightly. But it'll be just the same. And then we're going to have the furniture. We're going to get, this sort of...
Chairs and tables
and street furniture so that people have a place to eat lunch or sit or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of these stone elements we're hoping to use reclaimed blocks from the Upper Roberts Meadow Dam project, mm-hmm. Which is going to be taken down. And so we're hoping to reclaim those and use them as elements in the park. So, the woman, Lauren Simpson, who presented this whole thing and ran all the public charrettes, design charrettes, they really did a lot of research on the history of the park, and they also tried to really incorporate natural elements from the valley. So I think at the end of the day, even though it's a shock for people to see like the spruce tree or the evergreen tree cut down, et cetera, they are going to replant an evergreen type tree at the back of the park. So that's going to be sort of a nod to that.
Do you know anything about the funding? Like a lot of times people, or the DPW, whoever plants new trees, but a lot of them don't make it. Like, is the funding built in to include maintenance and replanting?
Yes, the maintenance is all included in terms of the DPW maintaining the trees, and they've tried to pick species that will be appropriate and hardy for this particular area, so we don't run into problems. That's the plan.
Thanks a lot for taking the time.
No problem, yeah. But check out the full plans online, and that gives you a better sense of it.
Okay.
All right, see you.
That was Mayor David Narkowitz talking about the Pulaski Park redesign in downtown Northampton.
You should have been talking about the tunnel under the railroad, too. When are we going to get that? 2 years later.
2 years. 10 years. I don't know how many years later. Let's see. In terms of the cost, they say it's going to be around maybe up to $2.4 million. They say that the cost is in line with other urban parks renovation. And like the $1 million it took for the Forbes Library renovation, $200,000 of the money is to bury the utility wires.
Let him rest in peace.
which I don't know.
A ceremony
if
for
you
that
build
one.
The if you bury the utility wires, then you can the trees can grow more freely. Let's see, what else? So, another clip I have. Well, I'll talk about nature a little bit more. I just want to give a big thank you to all the people who plant trees with edible things around town. Mm-mm. Yeah, for brunch today, I had fresh tart cherries and I had apples. July 7th, and I had apples, the early apples.
Were they ripe?
Yeah, they were ripe.
Where?
You know, on the corner of Franklin. No, on the corner of Franklin and Elm Street. There's that tree there. It produces every other year. It produces every even year.
There's a lot of apples around, I see.
Yeah, and there's lots more coming. But the people that live there, I've often seen a sign that says free apples, and they're falling all in the street. Now, granted, you know, they're not the tastiest, you know, they're kind of sour and mealy, but they're apples. And, you know, when I'm doing my route and they're just like right in front of me.
And they're not waxed?
They're not waxed. They're fresh. I mean, if you get them really fresh, like within 5 minutes of picking them off the tree, they're actually kind of crunchy. I'm sure they'd probably be good to cook with or something. So, yeah, thanks to people that plant things that other people can eat and share them.
How about your blueberry bushes you take good care of every year?
Yeah, but their apple tree.
Tasty.
Yeah, their apple tree makes a lot more food than the blueberry bushes that we planted by the path. So I have a little interview. No. Well, like a one-minute interview with my niece and nephew from Kentucky talking about spiders. We were actually out picking raspberries on the side of the road when we had this conversation. This is my my niece Milka and my nephew Johannan. Johannan, can you tell me what you think about spiders?
I think spiders are the best thing that happened in the world, according to the fly thingy. Because if there wasn't any spiders, flies would pretty much... There would be a real Lord of the Flies. In fact, flies would pretty mean millions of Lords of Flies. They rule the earth. Nice thing. They only bite because they're scared.
Okay, you have any words of wisdom about spiders?
If there weren't any spiders, then the flies would be ruling, They'd be in your houses, and they would be in your fruits and all that. Then people would start to put these toxic things for other animals and bugs, which would kill them or get them sick. Mm-hmm. Because there were so many flies. But if there were, which there are, spiders, they calm down the flies and all the other ones that suck your soul. That suck you.
That suck your blood.
They calm them really down. Crunch.
Here's another environmental kinds of things. Have you ever wondered what the environmental police do? Well,
not much. Unless they got a boat or four-wheel drive.
Well, I interviewed an environmental police officer, and this is what he had to say.
I was wondering if you could just tell me what the environmental police do, what you're about.
Well, we enforce ATV, snowmobile, boating regulations, hunting and fishing regulations. We do search and rescue. We're police officers, so we respond with local PDs to domestics. We can stop motor vehicles for infractions. It's not our prime responsibility, but we patrol the woods and waters of the Commonwealth.
What's your region?
My region goes from Cummington to Quabbin Reservoir, uh-huh. And north and south, north of Northampton, probably a few towns either way. So it's a fairly large piece of property. We have assigned districts. My district is five towns out in the Hampshire County.
So. Are there any kinds of calls or areas or that are more enjoyable for you that you more like look forward to or get excited about?
I get excited doing the fall hunting stuff, sitting on fields at night. Mm-hmm. Looking for poachers and
Yeah, so.
So poaching, is that just like typically people hunting without a license? So what kind of poaching do you see?
It's rare, but you'll have people spotlighting fields at night, looking for deer.
Out of season.
Out of season. Wrong implements. So.
Anything you'd like to share?
Well, I'd like to see them respect the outdoors a little bit more. There's places for people to ride ATVs. They can go to designated state forests and ride. The season is open for them now. They certainly don't want to be trespassing on other people's property without permission. Same goes with the hunting community, fishing community. And on the water, people operating boats on the water, just do it responsibly. Mm-hmm. You know, don't party too much. And so.
Man, they would have a blast in Kentucky, any ATVs. They just fly down the road, no helmets, no license, no nothing. It's
kids 12, 13, 14 years
yeah,
old.
Yeah, two or three on a thing. I seen a family one time, one of the first times I went down there, and they pulled up into the general store, and they had like a roof on this, like, it was like for a family of four. They had a cooler in the back, and they were just going for a Sunday drive. They would have. I do have to say one thing good about the environmental police. Years ago, there was a group of us, and we were camping down off Hocknum Road in the Meadows, and it was federal land, so we were basically a protected species, homeless. And the only people that could really hassle us were the environmental police, and they come down like one night and they looked around and says, you know what, you guys got a pretty good setup here. Okay, mm-hmm. No bonfires. And I said, great. And they never bothered us. When the mm-hmm. local police would come down, we'd say, what do you want? Get out of here. You can't touch us out here because we're protected. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they were pretty nice sometimes.
All right. Thanks for sharing that, Dwayne.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio, WXOJLP 103.3 FM, Northampton. Stay tuned for Democracy Now, coming up at 5 o'clock.
I found a boy today. It looks so good, why did you throw it away?
You want to learn to fix your bike? How to keep it tuned up so it's there for you when you need it? Or maybe you know already, but you just need to borrow a bike-specific tool that you don't have. Well, come to the Bike Lab.
Almost every Saturday since 2004, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., here in Northampton at 12 Northern Avenue.
Come with your bike or your questions.
And your willing attitude.
Spare parts scavenger hunt every weekend.
Being up at our Bike Lab in Northampton, y se divertirá mucho, le enseñará muchas lecciones cómo arreglar bicicletas.
All repairs guaranteed to the end of the driveway.
Details are online at pedalpeople.coop. That's the Saturday Bike Lab at 12 Northern Avenue, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. They say freedom isn't free, but at the Bike Lab it is.
Ya súbase a la bici, compa. Trépese a la de montaña, la bici urbana, la bici cross. Lléguele a la bicicleta, ya de menos a la eléctrica o a la estática, ya no hay tos. Llegaré pedaleando en el viaje de allá para acá.
Are you interested in connecting with the international community in the Pioneer Valley? Then volunteer to help your immigrant neighbors improve their English and integrate better into their surroundings. Become a volunteer tutor. Take a free 15-hour training taught by the International Language Institute in downtown Northampton. For more details and an application, go to ili.edu or contact Amy at ili.edu. Students come from Africa, Asia, Europe, Latin America, and the Middle East. So volunteer to tutor and expand your world.
A Baha'i Perspective, hosted by Warren Odess Gillette, is a weekly radio broadcast of biographical interviews of people who have either chosen the Baha'i Faith as a way of life or who have a relationship with the Baha'i Faith. You can listen to the broadcast on Saturdays at 10 a.m. on WXOJLP 103.3 FM. That's Valley Free Radio.
You are listening to Democracy Now! On Valley Free Radio.